Hello there, and welcome to Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. We start with a report on the treasures found as a result of Irish road building. Then on to clear views ahead for a British Iron Age farm. A 3,500-year-old spearhead is found in Scotland, and the Thera volcanic catastrophe is dated to precisely 1613 BCE. An Oregon cave yields evidence about prehistoric America, and in Russia, a site reveals extraordinary Paleolithic artworks. We get a glimpse of Iceman Otzi's Last Supper, and archaeologists in Iran rush to save Bronze Age sites. While in Peru, we have a look at dental plaque and the clues that it gives us to the diet of these ancient Peruvians. A rare Bronze Age amber necklace is found in England, and finally, a new insight on Great Smoky Mountain's first residents is brought together. The Irish economic boom may be at an end, but the flurry of road building has uncovered a wealth of archaeological finds with lasting value. In particular, the digs along proposed routes have shed light on unknown archaeology that might never have been examined. In 1993, there was one road excavation, but by 2007, there was 579. And they usually turn up something of interest. There can be a tremendous amount of results from post-excavation work also, looking at the samples, the reports, the finds, the records, and on. Some of the sites, most importantly and obviously, the M3's route at Tara, have courted controversy, but ultimately the road-building period will have a profound impact on our understanding of how Irish people lived day-to-day. For more information about that, go to www.nra.ie/archaeology. In fact, Edder Clun in County Longford has long been a popular site for roads, as they found out. A development on the N4 showed with excavation a network of wooden trackways and platforms in the raised bog, dating from around 3600 BCE right up to AD 800. Well, you can always wonder how did they put the traffic cones up? Were they sort of little wicker ones? Who knows? There's a thought. Unsightly power lines that have been a blot on the landscape of a beauty spot in Hampshire are to be removed, with more than 2 miles of cable to be taken down in this area around Butser Ancient Farm. Some of which is an area of outstanding natural beauty. Southern Electric Power Distribution plans to bury the cables underground around the farm, which is a replica Iron Age farmstead. They'll use a technique called mole ploughing to lay the cable in fields. The method caused minimal disruption to the terrain by carefully threading the cable beneath the ground. Steve Dyer, archaeological director at Butser Ancient Farm, said that they'll be extremely pleased to see the overhead power lines and poles removed, so it will give a more historic view and setting to the Iron Age Research and Educational Centre. So you see, you can turn back time. A 3,500-year-old Bronze Age spearhead has been discovered in a stream in Dumfriesshire in Scotland. The ancient weapon tip was found in the waters of Mennock Pass, close to Wanlock Head, found wedged in a rock crevice beneath the water's surface. It's believed to date back to between the 15th and 12th century BCE. It's a small side-looped spearhead, which is the most widespread type of the Middle Bronze Age in Britain. It will be put on exhibition with other Bronze Age material, including a leaf-shaped spearhead from Dunscore and two other looped spearheads, one from Crossmichael and the other from Tynwald. Two olive branches buried by a Minoan-era eruption on the volcano on the island of Thera, modern-day Santorini, has enabled precise radiocarbon dating of the catastrophe to 1613 BCE, with an error margin of plus or minus 10 years. Speaking at an event entitled The Enigma of Dating with Minoan Eruption, Data from Santorini in Egypt, the study's authors Dr. Walter Friedrich of the Danish University of Aarhus and Dr. Walter Kutschera of the Austrian University of Vienna said data left by the branch of an olive tree with 72 annular growth rings was used for dating via the radiocarbon method, while a second olive branch, found just 9 metres away, was unearthed in July 2007 and has yet to be analysed. The researcher said that both olive tree branches were found near Bronze Age wall, giving the impression that they were part of an olive grove situated near a settlement very close to the edge of the Santorini world-famous caldera. The two trees were found standing when unearthed and apparently had been covered by the Theorem pumice immediately after the volcano's eruption. The radiocarbon dating places the cataclysmic eruption, blamed for heralding the end of the Minoan civilization, a century earlier than had previously been thought. I'm sure there'll be plenty of arguments there. For some 85 years, homesteaders, pot hunters and archaeologists have been digging at Paisley Caves in Oregon, USA. Until now, they've found nothing conclusive. Arrowheads, baskets, animal bones and sandals made by people who lived thousands of years ago on the shores of what was then a 40-mile-long lake, but is now a sagebrush desert on the northern edge of the Great Basin. But a few years ago, Dennis Jenkins, a University of Oregon archaeologist, and his students started digging where no one had been before. What the team discovered in an alcove used as a latrine and trash dump has elevated the caves to the site of the oldest radiocarbon-dated human remains in the North Americas. Coprolites, or ancient feces, were found to contain human DNA linked directly to modern-day Native Americans with Asian roots and radiocarbon dated to 14,300 years ago. That's 1,000 years before the oldest stone points of the Clovis culture, which for much of the 20th century was believed to represent the first people of the Americas. For many years, the prevailing view was that the Clovis people walked from Siberia to Alaska across a land bridge exposed by the Ice Age and spread south through an ice-free corridor down to the centre of the continent, exposed 10,000 years ago by warming temperatures. The Paisley coprolites indicate the people had found another way, perhaps crossing the land bridge but then walking down the coast or even crossing the ocean by boat, the way people went from New Guinea to Australia thousands of years earlier. Jenkins has never found one of the distinctively shaped fluted stone spear points that mark the Clovis culture, but in three digs at Paisley in 2002, 2003 and 2007, Jenkins had gathered 700 coprolites, perhaps a third of them human. The coprolites contain pollen, seeds, chipmunk bones, sage, grouse feathers, trout scales and things that ancient people would have been eating, but Jenkins couldn't be sure they weren't coyote. So, at $600 a shot, Jenkins still didn't want to get any of the coprolites radiocarbon dated until he knew they were human. But, in the year 2003, he received an unexpected email from Alan Cooper of Oxford University, who was looking for sites to test with new techniques he was developing to extract ancient DNA. In 2003, Eskevillerslev, then a postdoctoral student, took home 14 coprolites from the Paisley Caves. For years they sat in a freezer at Oxford until he took them with him when he took a professorship in biology at the University of Copenhagen. And in 2006 he then turned them over to a graduate student who was in need of a project. This student found DNA from two of the five Native American genetic groups, both having links to Asia. Radiocarbon dating at two different laboratories showed three were more than 14,000 years old. It was the oldest evidence of human presence in the North Americas, said Villerslev, now director of the Centre for Ancient Genetics at Copenhagen School. When Jenkins returns, probably next spring, the coprolites could reveal how many individuals lived in the caves at any one time, how many were men, how many were women, how closely they were related, and even what time of year that they were there. It worried him to think that what had been previously destroyed in the process of digging to get out artifacts, artifact hunters just throwing out coprolites as they didn't think much of them. Well, there's a lesson for people. Poo can be more important than gold. Archaeologists in Russia have discovered an extraordinary group of Stone Age artworks which appear to have been carefully buried in pits and covered with mammoth bones. At least some of the 21 to 22,000-year-old objects appear to have been regarded as magical. The collection includes the only examples of images found to date at the site. What appears to be three overlapping mammoths, only a few centimetres long, carved onto the rib of a mammoth bone. The carvings may have been part of some form of hunting ritual. They also uncovered two female figurines, including one 16.6 centimetre tall, with a head that they've called particularly accurate in shape. The figures, or Venus statuettes, had been carefully placed in pits and surrounded with coloured sand. One is presumed to be finished, the other is clearly unfinished, and is about half as big. A bone fragment shows an oblique cross pattern of ornamentation. However, both resemble examples of other such statuettes found in Avdiivo site to the southwest, suggesting a cultural link between the two. The archaeologists uncovered the objects in 2005 at a site called Zaraisk, which was discovered in 1980. The site is about 100 miles southeast of Moscow. Researchers have been excavating the site since 1995 and have found a necklace made of teeth of an Arctic fox and a carving of a bison made from mammoth ivory. From the analysis of the intestinal contents of the 5,200-year-old Iceman from the Eastern Alps, Professor James Dixon from the University of Glasgow and his team have shed some light on the mummy's lifestyle and some of the events leading up to his death by identifying six different mosses in his alimentary tract. They suggest that the Iceman may have travelled, injured himself or been injured, and dressed his own wounds. The Iceman is the first glacier mummy to have fragments of mosses in his intestine to be found. This is surprising as mosses are neither palatable nor nutritious, and there are few reports of mosses used for internal medical treatments. Rather, mosses recovered from archaeological sites tend to have been used for stuffing, wiping and wrapping. Dixon and colleagues studied the moss remains from his intestines on microscopic slides to find out more about his lifestyle and events during the last few days of his life. Their paper describes in detail the six different mosses identified and seeks to provide answers to two key questions in each case. Firstly, where did the Iceman come into contact with each species? And secondly, how did each come to enter his alimentary tract? In particular, the authors of the new article in Vegetation History and Archaeobotany suggest that one type of moss is likely to have been used to wrap food, another is likely to have been swallowed when the Iceman drank water during his last few days of life, and yet another would have been used as a wound dressing. One type of moss in the Iceman's gut is not known in the region where the mummy was found, implying that the Iceman must have travelled from elsewhere. Professor Dixon suggests one type of moss found, which was Sphagnum imbricatum, is a natural antiseptic and could have been used to heal wounds that were found on his back and hands. Another moss is believed to have been used to wrap his food and keep it fresh. If he knew the useful properties of these bog mosses, as seems plausible, then he may have gathered some to staunch the wounds that he had been inflicted upon him. Five archaeological teams have been sent to East Azerbaijan to carry out rescue excavations at the reservoir of Khodo-Afarin Dam in the north of the country. Many Bronze Age sites will be submerged by a dam after it becomes operational. Tumuli areas are currently under research. The practice in the area dates back to around 2000 BCE, which is in this area the Late Bronze Age. The result of the research will be presented at Iran's 10th International Archaeological Conference, which will be held in the southern Iranian city of Bandar Abbas in mid-December. The dam has been completed 1 year ago and it's starting to fill. However, this was postponed following an ARCI appeal for rescue excavations, which are being financed by the dam's officials. Some artifacts which have been unearthed so far are intact and can be displayed in a site-specific museum if the dam's officials are willing to finance its construction. Starch grains preserved on human teeth reveal the ancient Peruvians ate a variety of cultivated crops, including squash, beans, peanuts, and fruit of the cultivated pacay tree. These findings by Dolores Piperno, staff scientist at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute and the National Museum of Natural History, and Tom Delaney, professor of archaeology at Vanderbilt University, sets the date of the earliest human consumption of beans and pacay back more than 2,000 years and indicates that New World people were committed farmers earlier than had previously been thought. To identify the starch grains, Piperno compared the particles and tooth scrapings with her modern reference collection of starch grains from more than 500 economically important plants. A rare amber necklace believed to be about 4,000 years old has been uncovered in Greater Manchester. Archaeologists made the find while excavating a kist, a type of stone-lined grave, in Mellor, near Stockport. Peter Noble from the University of Manchester, who led the dig, said that an amber necklace of this sort was one of the most important ways that people of the early Bronze Age could display their power and influence. The fact that it had been found in the northwest of England is actually extremely rare. The necklace was made of amber, which is not found in the region, with the nearest source in the Baltic. So the questions that are bound to be asked is how exactly did it get there and who brought it? The necklace consists of dozens of pierced amber beads of various sizes, linked together on a length of fibre. It was discovered in the kist by experts and archaeologists from the University of Manchester and the local Mellor Archaeological Trust. The necklace was restored at the University of Bolton and will be displayed at the Stockton Story Museum in Stockport later this year. Sorry, that was Stockport Story Museum. Picture a small group of men and women of, say, 20 to 30 people, cautiously making their way through a dense forest along a small stream, searching for a place to camp for the night and to find food. Roughly 10 to 12,000 years ago, that's probably what happened in the land now known as Great Smoky Mountains National Park in North Carolina and Tennessee, USA. Such small groups of people likely left the first footprints on the Smokies. Back at about that time, temperature in the region began to warm as glaciers retreated northward on the continent. Although no glaciers existed this far south, say geologists, there were pockets of cold that affected the environment, and in warmer weather, conifer forests began to disappear, replaced by the deciduous trees. Eric Kreusch, Great Smoky Mountain National Park archaeologist, said the area began to experience four seasons, with an increase in precipitation. Plants began to move up the slopes. With the arrival of deciduous trees, so did other plants. There were chestnut trees and acorns from oaks, which could be used as food. And also, under these more hospitable conditions, the animal population began to vary and grow. Stone projectile points and tools that have been recovered indicate bands of hunters and gatherers venturing into the park area in search of deer, bear and turkey. They became also skilled archers. By 7,000 years ago, Native Americans were exploiting all the regions of the Great Smoky Mountains. Archaeological evidence of Native Americans in the Smokies increased over the succeeding millennia. Settlements continued to be on the floodplains of the river valleys, and the upland areas continued to be used for hunting. From the period of around about 3,000 years ago, there's evidence of food storage and the use of grinding, and by 1,000 BCE, men and women are using ceramics, clay pots and pit firing. Horticulture began to play a role in daily life, and from around about 1350 onward, there's evidence of a trade in beads, clay pots, and actually the building of townhouses. Life for the Cherokee around what is now the North Carolina side of the park changed forever, however, in 1540 when the first Europeans arrived in the form of Hernando de Soto and his soldiers of fortune. After thriving for many millennia, the Indians were suddenly exposed to diseases for which they had no resistance. This had a great effect on the social makeup of the tribes and even brought about the complete disappearance of some prehistoric societies. And well, that's fascinating stuff and well worth checking up a little bit more on. So if you Google Great Smoky Mountains National Park and archaeology, I'm sure you'll be able to find an awful lot more. Well, it just ends for me to say, well, you probably noticed I'm not at my best. I have, of course, got a thing called man flu, man plague, which to, I suppose, normal human beings or women is called a cold, but I'm just recovering. So, pardon me. Hope you feel for my suffering and I've put up with my odd fluff and line. If you want to, of course, have more information, then please do have a look at the Past Horizons magazine. The next one will be coming out in January, but if you haven't had a look at the November issue, it's online now, www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. There's also more to be seen at the amazing preservationtoday.com. And can I remind people that Badger just gets bigger and better, and you'll be able to find what's going on in archaeology in the UK at www.bajr.org. Remember, More can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks for listening to Archaeology News Weekly, and we hope you'll return again to us next week. And I also hope that I'll be fully fighting fit.